Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Monday, the 29th of September. Very nice to have you with us. It was, I think, by all accounts, no matter where you were in our or are in our listening area, a gorgeous weekend, a beautiful, beautiful fall weekend. So hopefully you took advantage of it and enjoyed it. And we welcome you back to the program this morning. We welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Let me introduce our panel to you. They are raring to go. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here.
I'm sitting on pins and needles.
Yes.
Because we're getting so close. We have about, you know, the numbers are coming in, but we have about less than $60,000 to go in the whole thing.
For the Lockbox Challenge.
Yeah, the Lockbox Challenge, in which case we'll get to 25 from the Lennox Foundation and then the extra 5,000 from Alan Sagner. It'll be fantastic. But we've come a long way, but now we really have to turn on the coal because it's between now and shovel on the coal, as John Henry.
Yeah, okay, that's what I was. Yeah, turn on the coal.
Yeah,
turn on the lights.
Yeah, turn on the.
But thing. We are so close, you know, and my blood pressure is going. It's not good. It's not good. but we can make this. We can make it. Complicating all of this are those stupid things we're all getting in our email, you know, from every one of the candidates. They've decided we're so.
We're pleading with you, please.
Well, I think they ought to be barred from doing that. That's disgusting.
I think we'd be gone.
Right.
Have the decorum and at least do it on the radio, for God's sakes.
Right.
All right. So the lockbox, we're almost there. It's very cool.
Not almost. I mean.
Alan, let's not go too far here.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday,
We only
Sunday.
Have about
six no, days.
Days.
The heavy breathing part.
I go, ha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, you can breathe heavily from doing all kinds of things, not just one thing. So stop it.
I think her point was if you just turn on the radio.
Right.
You may wonder what.
I'm coming what in Gretchen's coming in with the results. Okay, to go. Okay, we have raised $243,283.56.
Wow, that's great.
Okay, to go, $56,716.44. We are so close. I could touch it.
No, you can taste it.
I can taste it and I can touch it.
I can breathe heavy over
just
it.
Just don't breathe heavy over it. That's all.
All right. Alan is here. Good morning, Alan. Very nice to have you here. Thank you very much for the update. Let's go to Rosemary Arameo. Good morning, Rosemary, University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter.
Thank you. Good morning.
Very nice to have you here. Anything you want to say?
No rant from
no
me.
Preface?
I'm done.
Not yet.
Okay. Not yet. And political consultant Libby Post joins us. Libby, thank you very much for being here. As always, we love your presence.
Oh, thank you.
All right, so let's talk about what's going on in the world, and let's begin with the president's interview last night with 60 Minutes, and the president was on, and he said, I think he said what maybe he had always, who was sort of always implied, which is that we sort of misjudge the situation in ISIS. And of course, now this has become a huge story. And I think anytime a president admits some sort of maybe not wrongdoing, but at least of not assessing a situation correctly, it's going to make news. But this certainly has.
Well, they almost never do. This is unique in that most of the time they don't. Bush forever, you know, weapons of mass destruction. You remember all of that stuff.
You just made my point.
Yeah, and you know, and here's a guy. So he comes on, and I know Rosemary's already beginning to grimace around the side of her mouth. But here's a guy, he comes on, and he says, yes, we didn't do it well. We got caught, we were short-sighted. And basically, you know, there's the old John Kennedy routine, which was, you know, I take full responsibility for the Bay of Pigs, and allegedly turned around and said, and I'll never listen to another damn general as long as I live. And to some degree, that was exactly what happened. Because he's saying, I take the responsibility. We got caught short. And then he says, my director of intelligence tells me, I think it's pretty plain that he has to take the responsibility.
Sure. Nobody ever took responsibility for the lack of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. No one. ever said, oops, we got it wrong.
No. I was waiting for him to say that we, that yes, we got it wrong. And I guess you can't have it both ways. But yes, we got it wrong. And with our allies, we misjudged the situation.
Yeah, but I think it's unique that a president takes that tack. The question is, will people say, well, that's good. He's a good man. He owned up to his mistakes. Or he's a weak man because, you know.
He made a mistake.
Yeah. And he said so.
And he admitted to it.
What do you think, Rosemary? I'm waiting for
you. I spent the weekend doing two things. I reread his speech to the UN.
Yep.
And I watched the documentary, The Most Dangerous Man in America, which is about Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers. And I am horrified at the connections, at the comparisons. And I know listeners and you, Ellen, will jump on me. Oh, it's not the same, but it is the same.
I would never jump
when
on
When Nixon... Heavy breathing and jumping.
Right.
Yeah,
right. Okay. I wasn't going to go there. Thank you for doing that.
So Nixon comes into office, his first term, and says, "I'm going to end this war. We're going to slow down this war." And then he begins using intelligence that's faulty, disregarding the fact that people in Vietnam were fighting for their own self-determination, which is exactly what's going on in the Middle East, and does get us more deeply involved than ever in a terrible war. And I see us going down the same way. Daniel Ellsberg stopped that. He was part of the way to stop it. And he said in an interview with Dick Cavett, the one thing that the people should do from now on, for always in this country, is to keep asking questions of government. So I am rejecting the notion that we have voiced here frequently that we should just trust that he knows more and that intelligence knows more. They don't, and they need to justify every step they're taking. They have American lives at risk, and they have lots of Middle Eastern lives at risk.
So the fact that I'm missing the point here, but for him to then say we misjudge the situation.
Yeah.
Are you glad to see that?
Or no, I'm not. I'm not glad to see it because we're still in there, involved in a war. And his speech to the UN was all about this is up to the Middle Eastern people to decide their own fate and to fight for it, and we should not be involved. And he's right. That was the case in Vietnam, and it is the case now in the Middle East. What are we doing there? What are we doing now? What are we going to win? And it's the other comparison that's really shocking is how much America was responsible for what happened in Vietnam and that entire area, and now the same in the Middle East. We have caused an unstable, ridiculous situation, and we continue to get more and more deeply involved in it.
Libby Post.
Well, I think that to say that we're interfering with an indigenous people's right to self-determination is just overstating it just a tad. Because ISIS is not really talking about setting up a new government, although ostensibly that's what they want to do. But they are also talking about killing all the infidels, which is everyone who doesn't agree with them. And so...
Including the Al-Qaeda people.
Right,
who they used
right,
to,
you know. Right. I mean, they're beheading their own people. They're raping, they're taking women hostage, raping them, killing them. This is not self-determination. This is terrorism. Once again, we just have to disagree here. I get where you're coming from in terms of the president and the steps we've taken and listening to bad advice.
We call it terrorism, Libby, and they are calling it Sharia law. And it is the vote of the people in Syria who continue to support Assad. I mean, I hate it, but that's their decision. It is not ours. And it will cost us many, many lives and money we do not have to make the decision go the other way.
Well, it's complicated.
Yeah.
It's very complicated. I mean, there's something to what you say. First of all, I think these are awful, terrible people. And
agreed.
I think if there's a coalition that's willing to say we're going to pay a higher price later on than if we don't stop it now, I think that it's terribly important that we do. On the other hand, I think you're right about a couple of things there. One of them is that they said that we have backed the bad players. And we've done it again and again and again. I mean, it's terrible that there are these guys who are running these potentates who are running these countries. But we jump in and we help the people who turn out then later to be the Al-Qaeda people and all the rest of it. A lot of that has to do with money, as Libby
and oil.
So it is not simple. I think what happened was, and I may be wrong, that as long as these dictators were running their countries and cooperating with the United States, it was okay. But when they got out of line, it wasn't okay anymore. But I think we have to do something about ISIS or IS or whatever you want to call them.
I would rather see us act in Ukraine, where to me there was a deliberate invasion by a force that we are committed and have an entire organization dedicated to containing, rather than here. And one other question while you're at it, explain to me the oil. I might feel completely differently if my gas bill had gone way down since we started getting involved in Iraq and Syria. My gas bill is not going down. So what's happening to the oil? That doesn't seem to be advantage to
us. No, but Rosemary, your gas bill in your car is going down significantly. And I find that very interesting. I'm always trying to figure out what it is. You're paying in Great Barrington this morning was $2.52.
Really?
Yeah, $2.52.
Oh, and there was
it's all over the place. And there was an argument advanced in one of the newspapers.
$3.52 or $2.52?
Yeah,
$3.52.
Okay. No, $3.52,
not $2.52.
That if it were $2.52, no, people would be driving in from
$3.52.
Texas.
$3.52 is better than $4.
I apologize to everybody who's listening, but I'm so sorry that. But that it's going down, and they say that there's a chance we would be going down lower than into the $2 range when this is all over. So how come? What is it? And they say, well, there's a glut, there's this, there's that. But I've always seen the larger hand operating here.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about the larger hand and many other. Go ahead, Libby.
You people.
No, go ahead, you people. The larger hand and heavy breathing and the rest of it. But no, go ahead.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back. We'll formulate our thoughts and go from there. We'll be right back. Roundtable at WAMC.org for you to form your thoughts and to write us a note. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support comes from Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing nature gifts, bird seed, bird feeders, and more to help create a backyard refuge, wbu.com/Saratoga Springs, and Curran Compliance Services, hosting a national symposium on life insurance compliance, November 12th through the 14th in Saratoga Springs, featuring keynote speaker Cynthia Cooper, whistleblower at WorldCom, currancompliance.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable discussion this morning, and we have Alan Chartok, Rosemary Romeo, and Libby Post at the table this morning. We welcome your thoughts as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Any letters you'd like to share with us, Alan?
Well, there's a too long letter from Don Steiner, who is our very good friend. And I will read it. For years, Middle East petrodollars have been funding terrorist groups such as Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and Hezbollah. These petrodollars have flowed both openly and clandestinely from a number of countries, including Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, and Kuwait. Terrorists have used the funds to launch attacks against Americans, Europeans, and Israelis. In general, our government has had only moderate success in stopping the flow, partly because of our dependence on oil and partly because of political and religious pressures within the patron countries. Currently, many of these same countries who joined the coalition fighting the Islamic State, a morphed version of al-Qaeda in Iraq. Apparently, Middle East petro nations are now concerned that terrorists may attack their citizens and destabilize their governments. Given this concern, the U.S. and Europe should pressure the petro nations to, one, stop the flow of resources to the terrorists, and two, provide the bulk of funding and the manpower to this coalition. We can no longer allow these countries to finance terrorism at the same time that they seek our military support. And Fitz Yu, come
it's a good,
on.
Good letter.
Says, Dear Roundtable, it is still because of the oil. Our addiction to petroleum products is driving our involvement in the Middle East, even if it is cloaked in a fight against the jihadists. Thanks for the lively discussion. And Walker checks in. He's our regular correspondent. We are not always comfortable with ambiguity. We are not at war, but we are being warlike. That presents some internal judgment conflicts, but in a way, what the U.S. is doing is performing triage. That's what he says. That's what we got so far.
We welcome your letters as well. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. Libby, I cut you off as we were just about to go into the break. So,
well, what I found interesting about the 60 Minutes interview last night was that the president, you know, pretty much admitted that we're the world's policemen. When there are hotspots around the world, when there's a great catastrophe or a war or some kind of strife, he was really clear. They don't call Beijing, they don't call Moscow, they call Washington D.C. And so I found that sort of not startling, but here he is in the swan song of his second term. You know, looking like the Democrats might very well lose control of the Senate. He'll be stymied every which way from Sunday to be able to get a new attorney general and be able to do anything. And yet reinforcing this notion that, yes, we are the world's policemen. And, you know, there are times when we have to step in and there are times when we shouldn't step in. But we need to look at. I find it interesting, Rosemary, that you would him rather have gone into Ukraine than do this, where you have an emotional attachment to Ukraine, and I get and I understand that, and I have somewhat of emotional attachment to what's going on in the Middle East because it all comes down to ISIS wants to destroy Israel too, and so you know on top of everything else, and so you know we can all pick and choose where we want us to be the world's policemen, but the fact is that we are. Because we do have the strongest military.
Well, and I think it goes beyond being any one president or a presidential regime. It's our role. We've always said, oh, we're different. America's really different. We're the role model for the world, the whole Statue of Liberty thing. We've asked for this. So if people call on the U.S. to help them, and they do, in Rwanda they did, in Bosnia they did, all the places I've studied, it was like the world will come and help us. Big story in the Washington Post about the Congo right now, which has had a horrible war waging for a decade. We're not involved there, although there is oil in Nigeria. Explain that to me. And we don't get involved, and yet people call on us to because we have put ourselves up this way. It's not just Obama.
Oh, no, I agree with you. He's just continuing the storyline of American presidency. You know, we do see our way, and I think anybody, well, not anybody, but you know, we've seen all of these guys get into office. You know, Obama ran as a peace president, you know, and then you are surrounded by military, you're surrounded by all these advisors, national security, all the different things that are happening, all these big toys that you can play with, and you know, and people. There's this tendency to say, yeah, we can do this.
Well, Libby, there's another. Well, okay. There's another. Okay.
Sure. We'll get that other view. And so we'll put Libby on pause and then we'll start up with that when we come back. But first, we have this short break. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Libby Post is here, Rosemary Romeo, Alan Chartok. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable@wamc.org. Let us go to some letters, and then we will move on to other topics in the news.
Okay, I'm trying to keep it one to a customer, to tell you the truth.
All right.
So, JTB says, Jim says, if Obama is wrong, we are indispensable because others won't fight. I served during Vietnam, a BS war. Several BS wars followed. All fighting should be by locals. No U.S. boots on the ground. And Vin says, American corporations, including oil companies, have upwards of $8 trillion stashed offshore in order to avoid paying their fair share of taxes. Yet when their overseas assets get threatened, it's poor and middle-class kids in our military who are called on to defend them. Does anyone think that our ongoing military conflict in the Mideast is anything different? I guess that's it.
We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org.
One more thing. I'm so sorry, yes. Joe. I understand, says Jason, I understand that price of oil goes below $80 per barrel, that it makes sand oil economically unfeasible, no more Keystone Pipeline. It also makes jockeying in the Middle East less profitable, says Jason.
WAMC.
We read them, you write them.
Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us move on to other topics in the news. And we go to, where was our governor this weekend? Well, our governor was
very
in Afghanistan.
Why? Because.
He was in Kabul, Afghanistan. He was with a contingent with three other governors, Tennessee Governor William Haslam, who is a Republican who is running for re-election, an incumbent running for re-election. Nevada Governor Brian Sandoval, also running for re-election, a Republican. And Jay Nixon of Missouri, Democrat, who is not running, but apparently while he was away, there were some problems.
Yes, there were
one or two problems.
There was some problem in his home state.
Right.
So is this, and of course, Rob Astorino is upset because apparently the governor did agree to do the debate as long as it was in Kabul. So
that's a good joke.
That's funny.
No, apparently they're going to do two, but I don't know that they're going to count for an awful lot. One will include the Green Party candidate, and mm-hmm. one will.
These
not.
Are debates you're talking
about.
Yeah,
the gubernatorial debates.
Yeah. No, but look, if you're going to run for president of the United States, you have to have some foreign policy experience. This is obviously, I was there. I went to Israel. Because this is a guy who does not leave New York State. He doesn't go out of New York State.
Kabul's pretty much far out of New York State.
Yeah, yeah. So it means that, you know, and of course, one could really worry about what all of this means. My sense of it is, let's say, just for the sake of it, his book is coming out in October, Cuomo's book. Let's just say that Hillary Clinton, Grandma Clinton, is not going to run. Then you would expect that he would know, he's a Clintonian, and that there would be hyped up, you know, stuff from him. Although his father, Mario, always pretended that he was running for president and then didn't. Mm-hmm. So, it's all, you got to read the tea leaves a little bit.
And we paid for this trip, right?
Well, somebody paid for it.
Some taxpayer. Well,
I don't know, yeah.
Bad. Trips are way out of control. I just was reading about five women congressmen who went to Africa, East Africa, to study. I don't really know what they really did, was went on safaris. And we pay for this stuff. And journalists have written about this for ages.
They always have.
The little
always
honey
have.
Trips. Mm-hmm. And they still keep going. And this is one. I don't get it. I even thought it was dumb that he was going to Israel, although you explained he needed the boat.
I wouldn't call going to Kabul like a fun place to go for a little R&R.
It's not like,
okay?
It's not like East
right.
Africa.
And neither is Israel, per se, you know, the fun place to go for a little R&R when you're doing a political trip like this.
Well, but it's a political trip.
Yeah, it's a political trip.
Rosemary, the United States Congress does have an oversight function. And what they've always argued is, how can we vote on something if we haven't been there and seen it for ourselves? Now, Rosemary is making one of those throw up looks.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then I want to see his itinerary. I want to see what he did. If I'm paying for it, I want to check it out.
All the generals, they tell you. Yeah, all the generals talk to him.
He went to the.
They could come here.
To the military things.
There's Skype. You don't need to do. You know, the news media have an oversight function, and you don't see them doing this.
Yeah, but he has.
Wait a second. Of course you do. You see people from the AP, from the New York Times, from other places.
Much reduced from what they should.
Rich and Engel's there all the time.
I don't think it's a good idea. I reiterate, you can just jump on me all you want, but it's not a good idea. I don't see why the governor of New York and of Missouri are in Kabul.
I get that, but the fact of the matter is, ultimately, I think it is good for our people to actually, if they can, see what's going on the ground so that somebody can make an informed decision.
I would rather Bill Keller from the New York Times go, and he can tell us what happened.
You don't get that choice. You just don't get to choose.
Yeah.
I know, but I should. I'm an American. I get to vote.
You don't get to choose, Rosemary.
No, you get to vote for the people who make the decisions.
No, but we all know what's going on here. Andrew is building up his foreign policy creds. That's what he's doing. And I wish I could disagree, you know, with Rosemary, because it's what makes my life worthwhile. But I really can't. You know, I mean, obviously this is political.
Yeah.
You know, you can. But the problem is, you have to stop at what he did, as opposed to what the political motivations may be. He passes a gun control bill. I happen to think it was a great idea. There are signs all over the place saying, you know, reverse the gun control bill and all the rest of it. But he did it, and it was right. Now, was his motivation that he wanted to be first after the horrible events in Connecticut that you get there? Or was his motivation that, hey, we've got to stop this killing? Well, to me, it works that he did it.
Right.
Yeah, right. I agree with that. Geez, we're agreeing a lot today.
Wow, well,
that's bad.
We need another topic. Yeah.
Well, I just want to read one paragraph from the New York Times article, which I really loved, which was, quote, "While he is not known to mingle with strangers in New York, Mr. Cuomo made a concerted effort to project a relaxed image among the soldiers."
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't mingle. He doesn't do the glad handing. Why does he keep? Why did he get elected? I mean, I know it's the name. I know they did a great PR campaign and media campaign, but there's got to be some warm and fuzzy somewhere, one would think. But
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Somewhere,
deep down.
All right, so let's move on to another topic, and then we'll take a break. But we did mention the unrest in Ferguson. Still a lot unknown about that, and as to whether any relation. As nightly protests continue in Ferguson, Missouri, two police officers were fired at Saturday night in separate incidents unrelated to the protests. According to police, a male Ferguson officer was shot in the arm during a routine patrol stop around 9 p.m. The officer was conducting a business check at the Ferguson Community Center when he found a man near the back of the building. According to police, when the officer got out of his vehicle, the man ran, prompting a foot chase. And then a second officer both are hospitalized. And then an off-duty St. Louis City police officer who was driving on the freeway in his personal vehicle came under fire from three men who police say pulled up alongside him. I don't know if this story has any more resonance than it shows this wide gap between the people of Ferguson and their police
force.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the answer is, how do we know? I mean, we really don't know what motivates if you get what is essentially this racial tension in Ferguson, whether or not, you know, somebody starts to think that the wraps are off. And that you can do whatever you want, or that we can operate under this system. That's a possibility.
Yeah, the president said it very well, that people no longer trust their local police. Right. And it's incumbent upon the police departments to make the changes they need to make to reassure and regain that trust. Because if the community doesn't trust the police and people start taking what they think is their lawful right into their own hands, we are headed to pure chaos.
Yeah, well, then we're back in the Middle East.
Right.
This seemed like really bad news to me. I guess they're still investigating whether or not these shootings were connected to what happened with Michael Brown. However, it cannot be helping the mentality of the police force. They have to feel like they're under attack, and they're more wary and more dangerous, and that's when you have more incidences. I hope the feds who are in here investigating are looking at that. Well, this is not a good atmosphere.
They told all the cops to take off their little wristbands that said they are whatever the name of the cop that did the shooting.
Darryl Wilson.
Yeah, Darryl Wilson. And you know, for the cops to feel under siege is a really bizarre way of looking at things.
But they do feel it.
I know they do, but it's like they're the ones with more of the guns.
Well,
yes. They're the ones with the power.
Well, look, there is still substantial crime in this country.
Mm-hmm.
We absolutely need police. I happen to believe that some bad actors are out of control, but most aren't, and that what you really need is some way of holding everybody accountable,
right.
Which is why I think that these shoulder cameras are a great idea. I mean, nobody would like it. We wouldn't, Rosemary and I probably wouldn't like it in our classrooms. Nevertheless, this is not a classroom. Although there's an argument to be made for it. This is the police with the monopoly on firepower, or supposedly with a monopoly on firepower. And they say, look, we need the community behind us. This is a good way of doing it. And believe me, the bad actors will think twice if they've got that thing on their shoulders.
And I agree with you, Alan. I support the police as well. I want them there when I call 911 when something goes wrong. And I've had to do that a couple of times in the 50-something years that
sure.
I've been on the earth. You know, but what we need is this emphasis on community policing and for the police to really understand the community and to reflect the community. Part of the problem in Ferguson is the majority of the community is black. The people in power are white. And then you have a white officer kill an unarmed black teen. And we keep seeing more and more of these stories of white officers killing black folks or shooting them for no real reason. And every day on Facebook, we see more and more of these stories from credible sources. It's not like it's just made up. And so we do need to do something. Something needs to happen on both sides of this equation.
Well, I have no argument about Ferguson. I think that's a police department that's in trouble, that has that is in the news, and that is under investigation. And yes, put cameras on them. My hesitation is: do we do it to everybody? You know, every police force in the whole country needs
Why
to
not?
Have this.
Why not?
I mean, what's the downside? The downside is that a policeman will not take action if he or she believes that they're going to be held accountable. I mean, how does that work? To me, accountability is what this is all about. These are very powerful people, but they're very smart.
Well, I would like President Obama to wear one because I do believe in accountability at that level. But at a police level, we need to hire and train people who can act on their own using their own indiscretion. And I don't think that should be always under view.
Well,
how do you do that? It's an invasion of their privacy and stops them.
Well, how do you do it without chokeholding, you know, as we saw? You know, Rodney King never would have been a thing, as I've said before, mm-hmm. if it wasn't done by video.
That wasn't a video that a cop wore, though. It was a video that
No,
that
but
the
it was a video
wore.
That somebody wore. It was there.
It was their little cell phone like this. We all have them now.
Not at the time. But it wouldn't have It wouldn't have happened unless the Rodney King thing would not have happened
right.
unless it was on tape. It's that simple.
Well, I agree with that. I just, again,
well,
will say there was not a cop wearing
What'd you say,
it.
Joe?
I said the Ray Rice thing wouldn't have happened if we didn't
yeah,
have it on
that's
tape.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. So, look, I think we should pay the police well. I think we should hire them. I think, you know, they're the great interveners. They're the ones who have to have all the mental health training when people are, you know, really acting out and everything else. But on the other hand, there are always going to be people who get attracted to police work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about everybody. Let me be clear on
right.
this. I'm talking about there are always going to be some, and I've seen them before. Who are basically bad people.
I want to give you one more example to respond to. Judges. Our courts have ruled that no, we can't put cameras in courtrooms because the judges and others will act differently if there's a camera
yes,
on them. So
true.
How come it's different for a judge in a courtroom than it is for a cop?
You always make these arguments, Rosemary, which is, I'll show you two situations.
That's
this
goose,
is a bad
good
situation.
For the goose. Yeah, it's good for the gander.
Well, the Supreme Court of the United States, for goodness sakes, one of the three major branches of the government of the United States we are not allowed to see these people on television.
Yeah.
And to do it, it's ridiculous.
So you would put a camera on a cop when the Supreme Court has exempted itself?
No, that's not the way to look at it. I would put a camera in the Supreme Court and I would put a camera on the cop. I would do both.
Ooh, George Orwell. read 1984. We're living it. We've all got a democracy.
We got a democracy, and we can't see these Supreme Court people in
Oh no, 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 no! I am not disagreeing with that. My position. Let us get this straight. It's not all or nothing. My position is that people in high positions, and the Supreme Court is among them, and people in police departments who are in trouble, like Ferguson, who have reason to doubt. Yes, we put cameras on them, but not blanket cameras. Okay. That's invasion of privacy.
Okay, so you do it in Ferguson. Would you do it in the Bronx?
I don't know. I think a case could be made for the Bronx, but I'm not thinking now. Would I do it in Ballston Spa where the police tasered that guy?
I don't see why not.
Why not? I mean, if you're going to do it on one, you have to do it on all. You can't
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's not true.
Oh, sure.
Why?
For the cops? For
why?
Police? Yes. Why not?
I don't understand why.
Because
it's
an extreme measure.
But how do you know it's an extreme measure before the measure?
To put a camera on something so that every minute of your work life you are under surveillance, you don't call that extreme?
What I'm saying is that why would you have put a cop? Why would you have put a camera on the cop in Ferguson prior to killing?
I would put it on now, from now on, after they have been in trouble. That's why I think the Bronx. You might be able to make a case that there have been a number of incidences there.
Well, you know, cops have tremendous power, and it has not been unknown for a cop to visit a prostitute, for example, who basically he or she have got to. You know,
put out.
Corral and, you know, all the rest. I think that when you give somebody that much power, there have got to be ways in which you hold them accountable.
I do think there should be ways to hold them accountable. I'm just not sure that 24/7 filming is the way to do it.
And do you include that on dashboard cams and police cars?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know how they're used. I'll get back to you on that.
Right, for traffic stops.
Whenever a cop gets out of the car, it's on.
Well,
to tape the interaction between the
if the cop can turn it on and off the way a reporter turns a camera on and off, then yeah, I think that's a completely different thing.
Black box and planes?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's take a break. We'll be back. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support comes from New England Auction, South Deerfield, Massachusetts. For 40 years, an international auction gallery offering fine art, books, maps, and antiques, featuring the fourth folio edition of Shakespeare in September. 413-665-3253 for gallery or auction information. And Field Goods, delivering fresh produce from local farms for pickups at workplaces or community sites from Saratoga to Yonkers. Field-goods.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel and our final moments. And as promised, we have an update on our lockbox challenge. We got a mini update earlier this hour, but now Megan Finnegan will make it all official and tell us exactly where we are at this very moment. Good morning, Megan. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Wonderful.
Excellent. So the lockbox challenge, set it up, Alan.
Well, lockbox challenge. This is everything to us. Either we're going to function as a community, or we're not. It's that simple. This is not some phony political appeal, you know, which have been crowding our boxes. This is our very existence. And you guys can laugh, but I got to sit here and not sleep at night worrying about this. And I'm very.
I
worried.
Was laughing about the crack about the email.
Well, okay, no, all right. I mean, I'm not holding you accountable for that. I don't have a camera on you. Oh, yes, we do. Okay, Megan, go.
All right. We have $243,933 in the lockbox.
So we only have basically now 6 days left. Is that right? It's about 6 days.
So, six and a half days.
Yeah, till the first thing on, oh, boy, this is going to, why do you people do this to me? We're getting so close. Oh, goodness gracious. This is
so 56, we need $56,067.
Yep, about $8,000 a day.
All right.
All right.
$8,000 a day won't do it. something may happen between now and then. We need to have 20,000 a day.
That would
be
nice.
Couldn't we just wait, make it early? Couldn't we just do it early?
We could have the whole fund drive over before it began.
That's right. I mean, if we do, if we go over 300,000, that just takes time off the fund drive.
By the way, you are so right. You're both brilliant. Thank you for that insight.
I love it.
Megan, thank you very much. We'll check in with you tomorrow and find out how things are going.
All right. Thank you.
Excellent. Alan, I think we have a letter or two.
Yes, yes. Vane says, please read The Circle, Dave Eggers. 1984, it is not.
That is very true.
Okay. And
no, it's 2014.
And Seagun says, retail and bank workers work under camera all day long. What's the difference, Rosemary? Let's see. I guess. And Olaf says, did we read this? Obama's being pushed into this war by the right wingers in this country. It is no secret that Americans are a violent society and love war and guns. Obama's and the Democrats' numbers are tanking because he's hesitant to get back into a war. It's all about the November election. Soldiers and civilians' lives be damned, he says. And I think. Joe, that
we just got one in from Joe, if you want to read that.
Oh,
real
yeah,
quick.
Joe, there it is. Loving the discussion about cameras on officers. I'm curious, if we did it as a blanket procedure, where is the money for the cameras and camera maintenance would come from? There are communities in need that already don't have the budget to hire the officers they need already. How much less if dollars are spent on cameras? That's right. And the tanks that are being given to police departments right now and other things, who paid for those?
We did.
We can find a way to do this.
We are out of time, but I thank everyone who wrote in. I thank everyone for participating in the panel this morning. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.